David Rutledge. This is the Earshot podcast and a program that went out on the 13th anniversary of the Bali bombings. And it's a time when we think about the victims of that event and the victims of terrorism in general. But this story takes in the perspective of the perpetrators. Once you've blown up a nightclub full of partygoers, you're quite rightly branded a terrorist, and that's how you remain in the minds of the general public. But terrorists, just like their victims, have to live in the shadow of their deeds, and over time, they can find themselves changing. Nasir Abbas is the man who taught the Bali bombers how to make their bombs, but he regrets what he did. And today he's on a mission to de-radicalise Islamic militants, and he wants to meet the people who lost their loved ones in 2002 so that he can ask for their forgiveness. Here's the first in a two-part series from producer Rebecca Henschke.
The dogs are suspicious as former Jamaat Islamiya leader Nasir Abbas arrives at Nilu Oniati's house in Denpasar, Bali. Nilu Oniati welcomes him in. They sit down in a room filled with family photos of her husband, who was killed in the 2002 Bali bombings.
Suami saya itu kerja di Sari Club. Nah, di situ
my husband worked at the Sari Club.
Cinta kita
we fell in love there.
Terus, yang paling
menyakitkan the hardest thing is that I met him in that place.
Kenapa?
And I lost him in that place.
Di Sari Club itu saya juga
I worked there too.
Banyak cerita,
I have so many memories of him there.
Sama beliau.
Bomb explosions have killed at least 182 people in Bali in what Indonesia's police chief described as the worst act.
Urgently needed medical supplies are being flown to Bali to help treat those seriously burned in the Kuta bomb blast.
It's just pandemonium out of control here. It's just bedlam and mayhem.
When Nilu Oniati heard there'd been an explosion near the Sari Club, she left their young sleeping children with a neighbour and ran until she was stopped by a police officer.
Saya bilang, Pak, saya mau cari suami saya.
I said, I'm looking for my husband.
Saya lihat apa yang ada
I saw that the Sari Club had collapsed. It was just rubble and fire.
Dikasih kain kafan.
I could see people putting bodies under white sheets. That's when I knew that he was gone.
Udah merasa bahwa
there's no way he'd survived.
Beliau sudah enggak ada, enggak mungkin ada.
She takes a deep breath and turns to Nasir.
Saya kepingin mendengar cerita.
What I want to hear is the story of the people who did this. What was their motivation at that time? And their feelings when they saw that the people who they killed were innocent people, not the people they wanted to die. Maybe they didn't know the impact it would have.
Bukan orang yang mereka cari sebenarnya.
Mereka sudah membayangkan. Sudah membayangkan.
They knew. They would have known the impact of a bomb that big and where they exploded it. They knew.
Mereka sudah membayangkan.
Sebenarnya yang mereka tuju itu.
But who were they looking siapa? For? Who?
Sebenarnya memang.
They wanted to kill whoever.
Siapa saja.
Whoever?
Yeah. They wanted to get the attention of America, the country they saw as their enemy. They knew that there were lots of Westerners here in Bali. They saw them as collaborators. They didn't care where they came from. I want to teach them to stop doing this terrorism.
Sama saja. Begitu. Saya ingin ajak mereka berhenti.
Can I ask, what was your role in all of this? What's your story?
Saya baiklah.
Okay, I admit that I was their teacher in Afghanistan. It was during the war between the Mujahideen and the Russians. My job was to teach them how to use weapons. Then I moved to the Philippines, and that was also a conflict zone. The mission of our organization, Jemaah Islamiyah, was to create an Islamic state in Indonesia.
Over there?
No, here, in Indonesia. The people like me who'd been to Afghanistan and the Philippines, we wanted to concentrate on Indonesia, to create an Islamic state, a nation within a nation, or to be an independent nation. That's what we hoped. But I was one of the people who didn't agree with Osama bin Laden's call for revenge to kill American citizens wherever they were. I was not involved in the planning of the bombings.
Ya, saya tidak ikut campur.
But I feel like I sinned because I was related to one of the people who carried them out. I taught them all in Afghanistan, so I now feel compelled to try to stop them. I want to return them to the right way of thinking.
Maka saya merasa bertanggung jawab untuk menghentikan, untuk meluruskan, begitu.
The mastermind of the Bali bombings, Mukhlas, is his brother-in-law. Nasir left Malaysia when he was 18 years old and went to fight in Afghanistan alongside the Mujahideen guerrilla fighters.
In Islamic faith, we believe that all Muslims are our brothers, wherever they are, on which country they are. So when we found that our Muslim brothers in Afghanistan are being attacked by the Russian, so we feel that we also have the same obligation to fight with them, to defend them, to be together with them. So that's why I do believe that what I'm doing is in the right.
He rose through the ranks and became one of the head teachers at the Mujahideen Military Academy.
We are trained as military. We learn everything, the kinds of tactics. One of the tactics is guerrilla warfare. It's not only factory-made bomb, but we should also improvise to create a bombs. And I was being chosen to be one of the instructor. Then later, I'm in charge to train people. And some of the students who been trained by me, like Imam Samudra, Ali Imran, and some of the Bali perpetrators.
Nasir Abbas was also one of their senior commanders in the organization Jamaat Islamiyah, a group that aimed to create an Islamic state in Southeast Asia.
I'm struggle hard to establish an Islamic state. So it means that I should sacrifice not only my time, but also my life. Yeah, you know that crossing borders, it's a dangerous activities, okay? Smuggling peoples, smuggling goods, it's not easy. That is all dangerous. So I'm ready in case of any bad thing happen to me at that time.
Kadang-kadang muncul rasa takut karena kok mungkin teman-teman dari
Ibu Ernie and Nasir talk for another hour or so. She tells him she's worried about Indonesians going to fight with Islamic militants in Syria and Iraq. She's also worried about the men involved in the bombings who are now being released from jail.
Di dalam penjara bisa insaf, bisa sadar.
In jail they might say they've changed and that they've realized what they did was wrong. But when they get out and they join their friends, then they return to the path of violence.
Nasir tells her he's working hard to campaign against terrorism with his former colleagues in and out of jail. I take Nilu Aniati into another room.
Before I met him, every time I heard his name or the names of the others involved, I felt angry and wanted revenge. Who wouldn't be like that? But after meeting him and hearing his stories, I can accept him and believe him. He says he's going to clean away his sins by campaigning to stop terrorism and campaigning for peace. That's something that I greatly respect.
Saya hargai banget.
Nilu Aniati then wants to take photos together out the front. Back in the car, I ask Nasir how he's feeling.
Ya, saya merasa lega ya setiap kali kalau saya bertemu sama.
I feel lighter. Every time I meet a bomb victim, I feel lighter and my burden is lessened.
I felt like crying before. You didn't want to cry?
Memang saya tidak pernah nangis depan.
I never cry in front of people. When my parents died, I didn't cry. I feel relieved. I'm happy that she wants to sit with me and talk with me. I can understand that many can't forgive me. I know that they're living with a much greater pain than I am.
Mengalami hal yang lebih berat dari saya begitu.
A couple of days later, he calls me to tell me he's ready to meet with an Australian victim or someone who lost a loved one in the bombing that his brother-in-law carried out. Can I please find one, he asks. I contacted a dozen Australians who'd either been injured in the bombing or lost friends or family. Most said they didn't want to do it. They said it would be too painful. They were too angry and full of hate. Only one agreed, Jan Liansky, who lives in Melbourne. He was meant to be at the Surrey Club the night it was attacked. He read his plane ticket wrongly and went to the airport a day early.
When I got your email, it brought back the emotions of 2003, 2002 when the bombs went off. I lost my five mates and the emotion's still raw.
Jan used to work for Qantas and spent a lot of his spare time in Bali. He became friends with five of the security guards at the Surrey Club. They all died in the bomb blast. He's returned to Bali for the anniversary of the bombing. He comes back every year. He also sat in the front row at the trials of the bombers. He says he can understand why most Australian victims don't want to meet Nasir.
I went with those demons too. I thought, I don't want to meet these terrorists. They killed five of my mates. And then again, I don't want to be afraid. I don't want to be afraid. I think by meeting Nasir, I'm not afraid. But I can understand why people wouldn't want to meet. I can understand because they would feel like wanting to perhaps strangle the person. I sort of think, my God, I should be doing that, but no, I'm not. In 2002, I was really afraid initially. But when the trial started and I saw the security and, I got that determination, that hunger, hey, I want to see justice be done. And I went. And I'm happy again to come and see Nasir again. And
well, let's go and do it then.
Yeah.
Get to the Makassi, okay? Thank you. Bye-bye.
We passed cafes, clubs, Australian surfer boys, and Balinese men asking if we want transport. Then we stop at a car park. On its corrugated iron fence are flowers and photos of young men and women. This used to be the Surrey Club. The photos are of the dead. Jan turns and walks towards the official Bali bombing memorial. Waiting for him there is Nasir Abbas. He stands quietly, looking at the list of 202 names of the people killed by the blast. Jan and Nasir shake hands. Jan breaks down as he points to the names of his five friends on the memorial wall of the dead.
I'm so sorry.
They then walk back to Jan's hotel. They sit down at a table near the swimming pool to talk. Jan wants to know about Nasir's violent past and whether he's killed anyone.
So you're 18 years old?
At that time I'm 19 years old. After a year, get training and then I have a chance to join with the Mujahideen in the infantry troops. Okay, so I be in the front line. I shoot with my AK-47. And then I saw one guy I shoot. He stand up. And then when I shoot, he fall. So it means that I kill the soldiers. And my experience also in Philippines, when I involved in the fighting in Philippines, in the side of MILF, and I saw some soldiers have been killed by my guns. But I never killed civilians, I never agree with that ideas to kill the civilians. It's sinful.
So
what they claim as jihad, it is not jihad.
But so those groups that are there right now in Indonesia, they tapped you on the shoulder and say, hey, we need some help building bombs. You're not going to be...
I will not do that. I think my time to touch the gun is enough. Okay, I will never touch the gun anymore.
Nasir actively assisted the police in tracking down and arresting some of his former comrades after he himself was arrested in 2003. His allegiance was given the ultimate test when he gave evidence in court against the alleged spiritual leader of Jamaat Islamiyah, Abu Bakr Bashir. This is a recording of the trial. Nasir's evidence against Bashir nearly caused a riot in the courtroom. Nasir had to be led away under police protection. Jan and Nasir decide to walk down to the famous Kuta Beach. It's packed. There are surfers, girls in bikinis being asked by Balinese women if they want a massage, and Indonesian women wearing headscarves. No one seems to notice the significance of these two men being together. They sit down on plastic chairs and order drinks.
Do you feel any sense of responsibility?
Yes, of course. I feel guilty. I feel sinful. I feel there's a heavy on my shoulders. Yeah, when I found that the people who did the bomb is some of them who...
It's very hard for me to be sitting here right now.
The first thing that I think that, do the victim want to meet me?
Mm.
Yeah, when they knew that I trained these people. But actually, I never agreed. Yeah, any bomb against the civilians.
Jan wants to leave, but Nasir puts his hand on Jan's knee and asks him to pray for him.
They tell to others, Australian, yeah, that I feel sorry, yeah, and other victims, yeah, that I feel sorry about what happened.
It's gonna be very hard.
It's very hard, yeah. Of course, they will never forget the disaster. Yeah.
I'll never forget.
And I'm not asking for them to forgive me, yeah, but let them to know that what I'm doing now is against the terrorism.
Whether I can find the forgiveness in my heart, I don't know.
Yeah.
But I will also convey your message across to all the families I speak to.
When I get back, I ask them separately how they're feeling. I ask Nasir why he asked Jan to pray for him.
I asked him to pray for me because I don't know what will happen to me. There are threats. People hate me. The terrorists are not happy with what I'm doing.
It will take a huge effort for me to try and do that. I can't at the moment. No disrespect, I can't. Maybe in 20 or 30 or 40 years' time, yes. It's too hard to forgive somebody at this stage.
The next day is the anniversary of the Bali bombings. Jan wants to remember his friends by holding a small ceremony at the same time as the bombs went off 15 years ago. He's come to where the Sari Club was destroyed. It's now a busy car park. It's the weekend and everyone else around him on the Kuta Strip just wants to party. Some stop and take photos at the memorial or in front of the photos of the dead, but most don't. It's 10 p.m. In the dirt, he lays out 88 candles in plastic cups to represent the 88 Australians who were killed in the bombing. Amongst the chaos in the car park, Nasir unexpectedly arrives. He bends down and starts to help Jan light the candles. The following day, I get a text message from Jan. He wants to talk. He says he now feels differently about Nasir.
I know from previous years it's not an easy job lighting candles, and then I noticed he wandered away to the back with a little hanky. He was wiping away some tears, and from what you see on the media, that was a side of him. You don't fake sort of that sort of stuff. And I thought, my God, yeah, well, I think he is the real deal, and it's not easy for me to forgive. A couple of days ago, no, I wasn't going to say, sorry, look, shake your hand, I'll forgive. Certainly will never ever forget what's happened. I never forget my mates, but yeah, from a forgiveness point of view, yeah.
And how did that make you feel, that feeling of being, that forgiveness?
I feel like I'm setting myself free from a bit of a burden of each year I'll come back, I'll remember every year, but I'm not going to come back with the anger that I've always had. This time it's going to be, well, maybe I'll give forgiveness a chance. When you sit down and talk to somebody and they will tell you their story and you will tell them your story. And at the end of the day, the weight's gone off my shoulder.
1 year while Jan was doing his ritual of lighting candles outside the Sari Club, he met his future Indonesian wife. They now have a young son together. Her family has a house in Bekasi, on the outskirts of Jakarta, the same area Nasir Abbas lives in. They plan on meeting again.
Nasir Abbas is in a much more dangerous position now than before. When he was in the radical group, he just had to worry about not getting caught by the police. Now, his friends are his enemies. It's very hard to protect yourself when friends become enemies.
Haji Bambang is a Muslim leader in Bali who's also developed an unusual friendship with Nasir Abbas.
When I first met him, I can't say that I enjoyed it. I was always looking at his hands and feet. I am anti-terrorism, and he was a terrorist, so I was a bit afraid. He has military training. But on the third meeting, we became good friends.
Haji Bambang married a Hindu Balinese woman. For the small Muslim community on this majority Hindu island, the bombings were a disaster.
It was peaceful before. They went to the temple, we went to the mosque, there was intermarriage. Suddenly this radical group comes along using the name of Islam and people started asking me, does the Quran teach this kind of thing and all this time you've been hiding it? Another friend said to me, I thought Allahu Akbar was for praying, but now it's being said before killing someone. What's the truth? He asked.
Bagaimana ini Haji Bambang?
All these children lost a parent to terrorism. They're rehearsing for a performance to mark the anniversary of the bombings.
Saya Alif, umur 15 tahun.
My name is Alif, and I am 15 years old.
His father was driving home through Kuta the moment the twin bombings went off. He never made it home to his young family.
Sangat besar ya. Mama jadi single parent.
It had a huge impact on my life. My mom had to become a single parent. When my brother and I see people together having family events, it's really hard.
Alif is Muslim, and so was his father.
I think they learn very, very different things from us, in a really bad way. Islam doesn't teach violence. Their thinking is very, very wrong. I'm really angry and disappointed. But what can we do? Maybe it's the way of God, and we just have to accept it.
Watching her three daughters practice is Yoman Rinchini. Her husband, Kutut Samarawa, worked as a driver. He was waiting for tourists outside Paddy's pub when the bomb went off. Their family was poor before her husband died, but as a single mother, life has been extremely tough.
As a mother, I really want to be able to raise my children just like other people do, to make them happy and give them what they need. But all I can do is give them advice and tell them what they can't do. I can't afford to say, yes, you can do that. I can just say, no, you can't. Be patient. That's all.
She says her youngest daughter, who was very close to her father, was the worst affected.
She started acting very strangely. I kept getting called to the school and told that she was skipping class.
It's a familiar story among the terrorist-affected families here, even 15 years after the bombings. In a hotel room not far from where the bombings happened, a group therapy session is taking place. A young girl, Linda, stands up to ask the psychiatrist about how to help her younger sister who's refusing to go to school. Psychiatrist Made Naandra says not going to school is a symptom of some deeper issues. He tells the mother, who's also in the room, not to punish her daughter, but to come for some private therapy sessions. Today's event is organised by Istana Dewata, a community for the widows, widowers and children of the local victims of the Bali bombings. Nilu Oniati, who we met at the start of our story, is the group's chairwoman. She's raising two children alone after her husband, Gede Badrawan, was killed.
The hardest one was the youngest. He was just 1.5 years old. He didn't understand anything. He could just say, Pa. He was so happy if any man showed him any attention. He cried for a week. He used to say that his father was working. But when he was in fourth grade, he started looking at his father's photo all the time. So that was when I told him, your dad's not coming home. He's in heaven. If you love me, please don't cry, because then I'll be sad. While I said this, I was crying. He stopped crying because he didn't want to see his mother crying.
Her organization, which runs on donations, has given scholarships so that the children can finish school. And they're an impressive group of young people. 14-year-old Alif, whose father was also killed, has clear plans about what he wants to do with his life.
Ever since I was little, I wanted to be a pilot. After I finished high school, I want to go to pilot school.
His younger brother, Audi, is a talented singer and performs a solo when the group sings in front of an audience of more than 500 people that night. The song is a traditional Balinese song that calls for peace and harmony. His mother, wearing a striking red headscarf, watches on with tears in her eyes. Also watching is Nasser Abbas. He says he had to prepare his children to be able to answer questions about his violent past.
At school, some of their friends said, I saw your dad on TV last night. Is your dad a terrorist? My children then asked me, are you a terrorist, Dad? I told them, don't shy away from that question. Don't feel embarrassed. Answer, yes, my father was a terrorist, but now he isn't one. Now he stops people from becoming terrorists.
And you've been listening to the Earshot podcast and the first in a two-part series produced by Rebecca Henschke and Claudia Taranto with sound engineer Stephen Tilley. Nasser Abbas now works with the Indonesian government on their de-radicalisation program, talking to people at risk of becoming terrorists inside and outside of jail. And as I say, this has been part one. You can find part two on the Earshot website, abc.net.au/rn. Look for Earshot on the program menu. Or if you haven't subscribed to our podcast yet, then do that. Find us via your preferred podcasting app and you can get the story that way. And you can get all of our stories that way. We have an extensive back catalogue of wonderful features, so make sure you check all of that out as well. I'm David Rutledge. Thanks for your company. Bye for now.
On Background Briefing, the sand mining mayor from Port Stephens.
You know, I'm proud of what I've done, and if you're calling me a developer, so be it. Who gives a bugger?
Bruce McKenzie loves to do a deal.
The mayor made an announcement. He stood up and said, oh, good news, the bank guarantee has arrived as cash.
What could possibly go wrong?
Well, it's been like we've been operating under a bit of a boys' club for some time.
Download and listen to this Background Briefing from the RN website anytime.